Welcome, everyone, to the AI in Business podcast. I'm Matthew DeMello, senior editor here at Emerge Technology Research. Today's guest is Matt Burseth, co-founder and chief information officer at NLP Logix. NLP Logix is a fast-growing AI services firm based in Florida that serves both the public and private sectors. Matt joins us on today's program to talk about the last decade in AI development and how natural language processing became such a central driver of adoption for so many industries over that period. Today's episode is sponsored by NLP Logix. And without further ado, here's our conversation. Matt, thanks so much for being back on the program once again.
Thanks for having me, Matthew.
Absolutely. We're focusing on your backstory in this episode of the show today, Matt, not only because it definitely tells a pretty remarkable story mirroring that of NLP Logix, the company you co-founded, but it also helps business leaders understand, you know, where a lot of these technologies came from, especially what they're seeing in generative AI and the journey that has all been taking over the last decade before all these things kind of became a household name. So in which case, let's start from the beginning of where this future starts to emerge. You were a software design engineer at Microsoft going back 20 years. Hate to date you, but that's a little bit of the point of the episode. You know, at that point, not a lot of folks are talking about natural language processing or artificial intelligence. In fact, I think Mark Zuckerberg and I are still in high school at this point, you know, playing with MySpace. And I'm wondering what lessons from your time in software engineering at this point of technological adoption leave the biggest impression with you for where these technologies have ended up today?
Yeah, so I'd say, and this may be, I'll be honest, and this may be a viewpoint I don't know if I haven't heard a whole lot of other folks talking about. So, but I got to say, I feel like my specific career path has a is kind of unique in a few ways. So when I started at Microsoft, my title was software design engineer in test, so an SDET. And so right. I was firmly on the QA side of the product team. And I had this really, really unique experience where at Microsoft, of course, it's this massive company. And we had been working hard for probably 2 or 3 years as a product team building what we, you know, this very important piece of the product. It was kind of, and I'll date myself further here, it kind of predates some of the original object relational mapper. So it's a sure. pretty technical thing, but it's a nice tool for developers to easily get their data into and out of a database without writing a bunch of SQL. So we had developed this library, and my team was part of the team that was responsible for testing it. And so we had tens of thousands of QA authored tests, automated tests written in C#. And lo and behold, before we're getting ready to ship our software, which would have gone out as part of Visual Studio 2005. So that's the time frame. We realized, because Microsoft is so massive, we realized there's another team within Microsoft that is actually building almost the same thing. Quite literally, like right. a little bit of a different approach in this. And but we got messaged down from on high that we can't both ship. We have to find a way to stack our technologies so we don't ship two different things that are kind of confusing. And so what ended up happening is we stacked our technologies, and one of the main pieces that we kept from what my team had created was the unit test, was this massive test suite, because the test suite sort of defined the features and the functionality that was required or desired. And, you know, we could kind of swap out the implementation and do some different things. But in my world, like, I feel like to play that forward 20 some years, I think it's interesting now when you look at AI and machine learning, and you think about kind of how with language models and ChatGPT and others, it's really almost becoming, I won't say easy, but easier to build models or to build a software system that can make predictions or give you output. But what is still hard is actually understanding how good is it? Are we any good? Where do we need to improve? And so I keep that in mind. I always think about that as we build software here, AI-enabled software, and just think about the core mechanisms on how we make predictions or we generate text or we summarize things, that's always going to be evolving and changing. But the measuring stick on how we understand how good is what we've created, that is going to survive the test of time. That measuring stick, especially when it's, you know, relating to business value, that measuring stick is always important. And how can we design it so we can level up the mechanics, take new models, take new algorithms, and still make sure that we're achieving improved levels of quality as the system evolves?
Absolutely. And it also shows how far these departments have gone in the last 20 years in terms of the debate we have over and over. We've heard it on this show, the hammer versus the nail, right? And software engineers, they're a little bit more focused on the hammer. Customers care about the nail. I think you guys are a really great success story in that you come from the hammer side of the conversation, but you've been able, even, you know, when folks were telling you guys, why are you naming it NLP? No one knows what that is. And you kind of have a sixth sense for anticipating the language that's going to stick around, you know, what customers are going to focus on. So even just coming from that area of quality assurance, I'm wondering, what equips you to have kind of the sense of, you know, what the customer wants that everybody seems to be interested in taking in and drinking in data on right now? That doesn't seem to come too much from the quality assurance side. Like, it's needed to go to that space in the last 20 years, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the part that I think we really try to focus on is, at the end of the day, we're using technology to solve problems. Mm-hmm. And we're not using technology to use technology or to, you know, because it's neat, it's fun, it's powerful. It's always at aligning it with business problems and creating solutions. And I think that there's almost more of a, I would say kind of at a step back, there's almost more of a kind of an engineering mindset, as in we have a problem. We typically have data as the input, and how is it that we can build a system, a software system, that we can constantly iterate and make incremental improvements that are always working towards solving that problem kind of better, you know? Yeah. And our field is really tough because of the diminishing returns. You know, you don't, each incremental unit of value created, you know, there's a cost that goes into that. Mm-hmm. And you got to keep your eye on that and make sure that, you know, your investments are returning that incremental value and know when to kind of move on to the next big use case or the next area to go work on.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because I think a lot of folks can look at NLP logics and we steer them away from looking too hard at your end game in that sense of, like, okay, you know, like, especially you guys, you're a great example of what can happen once you've expanded, but you need to land first and you need to find that smaller beachhead of business problems, that niche market that you really, really understand to really communicate to the customers. But you guys are farther along that path. And now I think when you look at you guys, and you look at the success, it seems like it's all over the place, but those are the places you expanded from, very smart places to land. Tell us a little bit about that process. Where did you start at NLP Logix, and what did you see as your beachheads before you said, hey, you know, well, that use case makes sense, let's expand?
Yeah, you know, when we started the business, so going back, I'd say, you know, the 13 years, our main key, there's kind of two key insights, I think. One was that, you know, I look at my career from, say, 2005 to, let's say, 2010, but even the 2000s, right? The 2000, 2010, like the 10 years worth of software there that was being created, to me, was really just taking desktop software, web enabling it, and at the end of the day, creating systems to create and maintain data. Like, it was all about just get the data to a place where we can maintain it. And certainly that caused the data sources that we were accumulating, one is to have some structure, and two, to just grow in volume. So we see that, we all watch that happen. We participated in it firsthand for 10 years. And then I would say, you know, I remember when the Netflix did their machine learning challenge on their recommendation system, the $1 million challenge, right?
And of course, if you're not familiar with that, you know, basically Netflix said, we'll give you $1 million if you can improve our recommendation engine by X percent. And they did it as like a challenge. They put out the data set, you know, they recruited people from industry, a lot of researchers, a lot of academic institutions competed. And then at the end of the day, there was a winner and they handed out $1 million. And then right after that, I think, you know, you saw Kaggle, which ended up being acquired by Google, but they had this, they basically took that same idea and they said, let's get it, the competitions down to 3 months and let's run five at a time. And let's take the prize pool from $1 million down to $50,000 or $100,000. Mm-hmm. And let's kind of see if we can scale this. And from competing in that, with everybody else that was competing in that space at the time, and Logix, we would compete. You know, we were all, you know, at the top of the leaderboard with the same other folks. But what was clear from that standpoint was, one was, these problems are hard. They're the skills to build this stuff just didn't exist, and that's why there was places like Kaggle to go to. And the second thing is the building of the model is just one part. That's kind of in the lab, as we say. You're looking back, the data's frozen, right. Everything has happened. And in that place, you build your model, great. But the real challenge is taking it and getting value out of it in production. And that's deploying it, maintaining it, upgrading it, having it adapt as systems change over time. And we definitely saw that was a struggle. Not just it was hard to build the model, but oh my goodness, if you got one built, how the heck are you going to get it into production and get it, you know, make the total cost of operating it something that was returning an ROI? So we said, hey, you know what? That whole end to end, let's do that. And let's do it with, you know, an extreme focus on customers. And let's see if we can, because you got to keep in mind, you know, 10, 15 years ago, AI really wasn't a term in the mainstream.
Nope.
Machine learning was like the best term, but it terrified everybody. No one wanted, like, what is it? We don't know. It sounds spooky. I'm not sure we need that right now. And so our entry point to our customers was, hey, we think you do need it because you've got all this great data and you have all these manual business processes that can be improved. We think you will get some value here. And, you know, you talk about the land and expand, or, you know, how we get the business that we can grow. Is we said, hey, let's do something small scale. Let's do, and by small scale, I still get, you know, people here tease me about this, but the small scale, what we say is 90 days. 90 days start to finish, we'll get something done, and it will be delivering value continuously. And that's kind of our initial engagements. And then, you know, as you get success, you just kind of grow it from there. That's what we've done for 13
years. Yeah, so it sounds like kind of the philosophy was, don't build a brand on one problem, just offer to be in and out fast and really wow them in those 90 days. And that way you can kind of surf around industries, see who's interested, and you'll get a lot of different interests based on that 90. Really, really interesting strategy, really, really captivating, especially just for where we see vendors, especially with a cross appeal, you know, across a few different sectors, how it all works. But you were mentioning before how AI was a scary term, machine learning was a scary term. It sounds like we're talking like early 2010s or mid 2010s. Yeah, or so. And but you guys have this name, NLP Logix. And I know you guys from the webinar, Ted, you and Ted were both telling me, you know, people were telling you, oh, don't name your company that. No one knows what the heck that means. And now it couldn't seem with better timing. It really couldn't seem like better branding, you know.
Yeah.
I know you can sip your tea now.
13 years, you know, 13 years later, it comes back. So the long play, right? You know,
sure.
We got this great vision, but.
Yeah.
I would say just, you know, the only thing I would say on that is, again, coming from our heritage of in 2000, 2010, just building systems to collect data. You know, if you look at those systems, we all created the free text, the comment, that text column in the database, you know, that was ignored forever. No one knew what to do with it. And, you know, our thinking was there is a lot of value that can be mined from those kind of unstructured, messy, ignored fields that are out there in everybody's database. You just got to know how to work with the data. Even 13 years ago, you just got to know, you know, you got to know how to model the data, how to structure it. And clearly 15 years later, the space has just totally evolved on what we think is possible. Yeah. I always say, you know, 15 months ago, the day before ChatGPT became a thing, like a chatbot was like, if you said that, everybody would roll their eyes. It's like, no, I'm not talking to a chatbot. Are you kidding me? And, you know, here we are 15 months later, and I think everybody's got a tab browser open right now, right to a chatbot, right?
Yeah.
So
in banking, it was a dirty word. It really felt like it was a dirty word up until a couple of months ago. And that's me speaking completely anecdotally from just talking to folks on the podcast. Yeah. But really, and it only subsided because now, and we had debates about this at Emerge. Do you call it ChatGPT? Do you call it a chatbot? Do you call it conversational AI? Conversational AI seems to be the term for the stuff that's more sophisticated and can have deeper conversations with you. They call a chatbot what just kind of, you know, faces you when you just say hi through the screen when you first enter the front page of the website. But that speaks to kind of the problem, right? Well, and this is part of our task in research to try to see if terms will stick. What's out there in terms of the marketing language? I really appreciated kind of the insight you were bringing to that last name, just because, especially, you know, even 5 years ago, like NLP might have seemed like such an esoteric term. But I'm also wondering how that changes the conversations you're seeing with clients. You know, 5 years ago, if it was harder and you needed to explain what natural language processing was. Now that everybody, you're walking into the room and business leaders know what model development is, they're a little bit more prepared for your offering. How does that change your strategy? Where does that change your mindset in trying to anticipate that next big thing coming?
Yeah, well, I'll say in the short term, what it's done is everyone now basically has interacted with ChatGPT or Bard directly.
Yeah.
And so I think now the leap of saying, okay, I saw value in, you know, making a recipe or getting an idea or rewriting a resume, I see that. Now I can make the transition to understand in what ways it might be able to help my business or what's possible. Before that, our strategy as a business would be, we would show someone a really hard problem we worked on. And, you know, one of the hardest was, you know, we had a partnership with the Mayo Clinic here in Jacksonville, and it was, hey, we were processing MRIs of the brain, and we could basically show, and we would find abnormalities and everything. And we would go to a prospect that was looking at processing documents or something in financial services, not even healthcare, but we could say, hey, we can do this. Now, can we agree your problem's probably simpler? And they could make that, they could say, oh, wow, if you can do that, you can probably help us with our automation problem. Now, it's like everybody has interacted firsthand with a language model. And now that's an even easier conversation because they're already like, hey, if it can do that, I totally get how it's going to help us with these seven things that we have problems with in our business.
Yeah, so it's really helping folks more look at problems from a data perspective, which is really great for you guys, especially because you were smart about at least the early part of building your business of let's not at least brand on industries and business problems. Let's just do a knockout job solving those business problems and then see what else we can handle from there once we've educated the customer on how to look at things in that data-based way and see those problems. Am I catching on to just kind of the longer trajectory here? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, just given where we are right now, I know, especially with being on top of natural language processing, you've been naturally ahead of the curve, especially when large language models are all the buzz right now. But I'm wondering how you're looking at the future, what you see coming next, and what your advice would be for business leaders trying to anticipate what that next wave might be.
Yeah, you know, I think what we're seeing as far as what's happening is, my opinion is that, you know, we've got 30 years, I'm looking at the calendar, 30 years worth of enterprise software that's been created. And a lot of that is automating back office systems. They're some are web enabled, not all are. But my opinion is that 30 years of software is going to get rebuilt in the next 5 to 10. And it's going to get rebuilt with not AI as, you know, kind of a bolt on or kind of a onesie twosie, but they're going to get rebuilt with a language model being
part of kind of the platform, like kind of the, you know, some of the tooling that the product and the developer teams are going to have with them as they rethink their software and their solution. And I think that there's going to be like this collapsing of what, you know, we're going to stop saying, hey, we have an AI enabled product. No, that is just the expectation. And like a software engineer or a data engineer, or your development team, like I think AI is going to be kind of a cross-cutting skill that is just going to be kind of baked in. Like, you know, you think you're a full stack developer, they've got data, middle tier, web, AI. I think you're going to have that as a skill set. And I think, I certainly believe that the software is just going to get rewritten. And if your software, if you're not thinking like that, I really think you're probably going to get, you know, left behind. You know, how fast that happens obviously depends on the industries you're in. Maybe you can squeeze out another 5 years, but certainly I really think that
it's need a long-term plan to really make sure that these technologies are embedded, because they are becoming the water that we swim in overall, not even just from a technical standpoint.
Exactly.
Very interesting stuff, Matt. I know we're coming close to the top of the hour. Really appreciate you going through your resume for a little bit and letting us peer behind and read between the lines a little bit of what's going on here, especially with what we've seen with these technologies in the last few years. Really appreciate you having on the show. Thanks so much for coming back.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Matthew. It was awesome hanging out and chatting.
Before we close out today's show, don't forget to check out our other two episodes in the series featuring guests from NLP Logix. First, our February 21st episode of the AI and Business Podcast with Jennifer Bradshaw and Arash Kamiar. That episode is titled Developing a Product Mindset in the AI-Driven Enterprise. Also, don't forget to check out our March 20th episode with Anton Kornienko and Ben Webster titled Essentials of Deploying Large Language Models in the Enterprise. On behalf of Daniel Fagella, our CEO and head of research, as well as the rest of the team here at Emerge Technology Research, thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll catch you next time on the AI in Business Podcast.